Hello, hello, and hello everybody. Welcome back for another episode, If Not Now, When. In today's show, I am so beyond excited to introducing Ron Green to join us. Ron, he is a Chief Technology Officer at Kung Fu AI. He is also a serious tech entrepreneur and expert in machine learning. He built several successful companies in the telecom, biotech, e-commerce, social media, and healthcare tech. He was most recently a CEO and a founder at Thrive Technology, acquired by Cloud, a mobile healthcare tech. Prior to Thrive, Ron ran a software development at Zimpton Technology, Power acquired by Dash Group, and the Visible Generic acquired by Bayer. With that, everybody, please join me to welcome Ron to the show. Well, Ron, thank you so much for coming all the way here to join us. I am so beyond excited.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's dive in. Tell us, how does all the journey begin for you, Ron?
Are you talking about the professional journey mostly?
Yes. Well, however, you know, I think sometimes, right, you know, our individual story connect the dot all the way, right? I'm curious, is there, you know, maybe you can speak about how you grew up. Maybe you speak about, you know, is there a thing that, you know, whether it's the value, maybe your grandparents or how you grew up, connecting to who you are today.
We can start
however you feel like.
Okay, great. You know, what I do now is professionally is work in artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And I think the path to that, there is actually kind of something interesting there. So I went to the University of Texas at Austin and to get a computer science degree. But by the end of that program, I was pretty burned out. I remember thinking going into my last semester that I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do professionally, but it probably wasn't going to involve computers because I was just really, just kind of exhausted from the very rigorous program there.
Of course.
In my final semester, I was able to take an elective, and I took a course on AI, and that obviously changed my entire trajectory. I knew almost immediately that's what I wanted to do professionally, and I was just worried though. My concern was, I was too late. And this is literally 30 years ago. So I was really worried that I was too late to the game, that everything within the field had probably already been figured out. And if it wasn't figured out, it was probably just about to be figured out. And, you know, here we are 30 years later, and we're really at the very, very beginning stages of artificial intelligence. And so I use that story sometimes to highlight to people that, you know, it's never too late to start something. And typically from the outside looking in, things are not as far advanced as you may think. There's so much more territory and typically work to be done almost in any field that if you're thinking about doing something, if you're thinking you're not smart enough, if you're thinking you don't have the time, if you're thinking you're too late, you're probably wrong.
Mm. Do it. I love that because I think we all have that voice in our head thinking we are too this, too that, too old, too young, too experienced, too not enough experience, all in above. And
no, exactly.
I love that great story.
That's exactly right. And, you know, with the field like AI, a lot of people are on one end of the spectrum. They either think it's completely all hype, or they're worried that the Terminator is coming tomorrow. And the reality is much, much more nuanced. It's much more complicated. And I think we have a lot of real important work to do in the near term to make it more accessible and more reliable for people. But I'm really, really excited to say that we're finally able to do things in AI now that I dreamed of 30 years ago.
Mm.
And so it's all becoming a reality. It's really exciting.
The full circle.
Full circle.
So tell us that. So after the elective at UT, you're fascinated by AI. What's next for you, and how does that connect to entrepreneurship journey for you?
Oh, great question. So I graduated. I knew that I wanted to go back to grad school to learn more about artificial intelligence and really be prepared to work in the field. So I took a job and was working professionally in software engineering for a few years. And then on a whim, this is back in, you know, the early 90s, on a whim, I was looking at jobs remotely, just thinking I would do something different.
That's so cool.
I know, it was amazing. Found a startup that was in Toronto, Canada, biotech startup, really, really early stage, single digit number of employees, applied for the job, flew up, really liked the team, and took the job. I was just recently married. My wife and I, we moved to Toronto. And what was great about that experience was, well, one, we were building high-speed DNA sequencing software and hardware, which was really amazing. I would use this as another example of it was a data point for me to realize, even though I didn't have experience in biotech or healthcare, that you can come up to speed on any field pretty
and
much.
And you're not afraid. That was your first kind of startup role, and you don't have CoinGoal bio or healthcare type.
No,
before.
No, I had none. I think there was an element of, I think I felt, oh, I'm young enough in my career. If this doesn't succeed, it's okay. But the experience was amazing. We were literally officing out of a closet at the hospital where the founder of the company was had a professional relationship, and we struggled to even make payroll a couple times, where we weren't able to make ends meet. Nobody quit. We stuck through, and then within a couple of years, we had built a very, very capable DNA sequencing system. And in fact, at one point in the mid 90s, we had the fastest DNA system, sequencing system in the world. And that company eventually went on to go public and get acquired. And so as a first startup experience, it was enthralling. Can you imagine? You take some job in another country, and you literally are fighting for survival with your teammates, and you almost go bankrupt, and then you have this massive success. So I knew pretty much from that point on that I was probably going to be involved in startups the rest of my life.
Mm.
But it was that experience there that convinced me for sure that I wanted to be involved in AI for a bunch of reasons I wouldn't go into. We were doing all kinds of really advanced techniques, post-processing techniques. And that's when I applied to go to grad school at the University of Sussex. And what's interesting about that is artificial intelligence at this point in sort of the late 90s was going through what's called the second AI winter. It means that it had essentially become, it had become so overhyped, and it had failed to deliver on its promise so poorly that interest and investments were falling out of it. So when I went to the University of Sussex, I was working in AI, but you didn't call it artificial intelligence. You called it dynamical systems or complex systems or other things like that. So it was really, really interesting time. It was really challenging too, because in those days, the theoretical underpinning wasn't anywhere near what it is now. So it was challenging making progress at that period of time, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's next for you? You had a first successful startup round, go all the way to IPO, must be super excited. Now, taking that win, taking that assignment, go to grad school, learn even more understanding about the AI field that you really want to get into. Now, what's next for you?
Well, so I got out of grad school just about the time that the internet.com explosion was happening.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And so, there was an interesting period of time, because pretty much all investment was going into internet-backed companies. Mm. So you really, it was all but impossible to do anything AI-related as a startup. And so I spent the most of my early years at a grad school working in the e-commerce space.
E-commerce space?
E-commerce, yeah.
That's a little bit left turned.
I know, it's a little bit left turned. You know, I think you have to... you have to kind of put yourself in the mindset in the late 2000s as the internet was really
taking. That was
taking,
exploding at
exactly,
the time.
Exactly. Mm. As the internet was finally really becoming distributed throughout the world. And so e-commerce was a big part of that.
Yeah.
The ability to buy things, you know, and do transactions online. And so it seemed really exciting and novel. And, you know, I remember we were doing crazy things back then, like trying to figure out how to do, you know, shopping carts, you know, online.
Because so you're part of a startup team while you're going grad school.
I was a part of a startup team called Living.com, which was based in Austin.
Nice.
And so we were applying, you know, AI techniques, but in very minor ways, not anything like we're doing now.
And then what happened next? And do you always see yourself at that moment always part of a startup, or do we ever think yourself going to start a business?
You know, at this point, I think I was really starting to think that I might want to start my own business, you know?
Okay.
And so when the dot-com bubble burst,
ouch.
You know, things were really, really difficult. I was in, you know, my early 30s and naively thought, hey, this is a great time to start a company, right? And so I did. With some buddies, we started a company that was in the networking telecommunications space.
How was that business or idea come about for you, Ron?
That's a great question. We had known each other because we'd worked together prior at another startup. And we really kind of felt that as the internet and networking technology was becoming more ubiquitous, that the tooling out there that was available was just way too expensive and too complicated. And it was geared almost entirely for really large, you know, Fortune 500 companies. And we had a belief that we could come to the market with really, really capable networking solutions, but that were much less expensive and more intuitive to use. And I think we built some amazing stuff, but we failed. We were not able to get the product traction that we needed.
Mm.
And so ultimately that was my first startup failure.
What's a difficult outcome to swallow?
It was really difficult. Yeah, it was really difficult. But one of the things that if anybody's listening to this and they're thinking about going into software and doing startups, one of the things that you may not realize is that just getting repetition, just having experience in startups is really valuable. If you start a company and it fails, investors won't necessarily hold that against you. They really like people who have experience, and most startups fail. I think people just know about the successes right there.
Yeah.
Most startups fail, right? And so you have to know that going in. And so getting repetitions at startups is really valuable, because you'll figure out, you know, how to raise money, mm-hmm. how to do product market fit, how to build the right teams, all these different types of things. So as much as it was painful at the time,
yeah.
it was really informative.
What's the biggest lesson in that?
It was a huge lesson, exactly.
What was the biggest lesson within that? Is it a product market fit? Was it raising?
No, I think you nailed it. It's that just because you build something doesn't necessarily mean you will succeed, because
so good.
You know, you can have a really high quality product, but marketing and mm-hmm. product distribution can still be really, really challenging. And so it's not enough it's not enough to be good and think that if you build something of value, people will find you. You really have to work hard on visibility and marketing. And in fact, of all the startups I've done 10 startups in my career. not one of them ever failed because of technology. It's really all about timing the market. Sometimes you're too early. Sometimes you try to do too many things and you don't specialize enough. I could talk about that all day.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, because I think today a lot of founders, they just believe that if my technology is cool enough, investors will automatically come. Well, customer will automatically oversubscribe my solution, right? And I think that's such a myth. That thank you for speaking on that.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right there. And things have shifted quite a bit too in the startup space.
Of course.
You know, 20 years ago, if you were starting a company, even if it was just a software company, you needed a lot of capital. And now the capital needs have fallen so low because of open source and things like that.
Yeah.
It's much, much more possible to do startups on the side. You can start investigating in the evenings, on the weekends with your friends and colleagues. And so you can actually almost go to market with MVP, you know, minimum viable product startups offerings before you raise, maybe even pre-seed, which that wasn't, you know, that would have been impossible 20 years ago.
I like that idea, because I think so many people are raising for sake of raising rather than actually seeing where they are, what do they need, and what is the next milestone or growth trajectory they are looking at.
That's right. And the nice thing about trying to build an MVP before you raise is you can do market product fit, and you can, if there was anything I was going to tell people, listen to your customers. It doesn't mean they're always right, but let the market guide you. Don't try to think in isolation what the market needs or what will be important to clients, because it's often the little things that they find valuable that you think aren't worth your time, and it makes all the difference.
I like that.
Yeah.
So, Ron, for you, that was a first biggest failure in your professional life, right? How do you get and keep going?
You know, I think, struggling to answer that one. I think you either feel like startups are, like the startup lifestyle is something that really resonates with you, or you don't. And for me, it just, I never wanted to get up and build or make or create something that somebody else told me to do. I just really always wanted to be in control of what I was doing and you know, the big decisions that were being made in whatever company or venture I was involved in. And startups are, I still believe this, the startups are just the most fun, interesting, way to spend your time, because you're dealing with a small group of, you know, like really smart, passionate people.
Yeah.
You're working together. Everybody can have a say in the decisions. Everybody can have an impact. And you know, you grow and you get successful, and you there are hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people involved. You will always look back to those early days of when you were a tight-knit team.
Small ship versus big boat.
That's right. And you're trying to create something from nothing, and that's really addicting. But people have to know there are going to be more failures than successes, because it's just really hard.
I like that you speak about that, because I think from outside, people look at all the glitters, all the glamours, all the assignments, and statistics shows is, you know, the failure is very prominent, but yet accepting that, knowing that it's part of the game, and still want to go after the assignment from zero to hero, from zero to one, I think that is really a true passion.
Yeah, totally agree.
So what's next for you, Ron, now after that chapter?
So I was involved in another handful of different startups, and we had, again, some success.
So you practically have multiple startups at all time.
I've definitely had different stages in my career where there were multiple, you know, companies running concurrently.
Oh, wow.
Right now, in fact, it's going on right now. I'm deeply involved with Kung Fu AI, which is an AI company. we basically help our clients build artificial intelligence machine learning systems, and we help with strategy and consulting.
But I really love the name, by the way.
Thank you.
Because when I first come to America, people oftentimes ask me, when you are from China, you must know Kung Fu. I say, absolutely not, but thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a great name. It's one of those names that's a little provocative and
no,
very,
I like
very
it.
Memorable, you know?
Yeah.
But we also, earlier this year, started another company called Imbue. And this is a product company. Kung Fu AI is a services company,
yeah.
Pure management consulting.
Yeah.
Imbue is focused entirely on the architecture and construction space. And mm-hmm. very briefly, we're using computer vision and NLP techniques to automate some of the really boring, repetitive tasks within that space that are typically done by humans, change management, code compliance, and things like that. It's
wow.
It's really exciting. We're going to be launching the first MVP of that product in the late summer, early fall.
Oh, that's super exciting.
Yeah, it really is.
And you are such a serious entrepreneur. I feel like you are someone that's just fascinated about building and create an impact. Is that so? Do you always know that about yourself, Ron?
No, I don't think I did. I think it was only through those experiences at the startup. I mean, I don't know if I hadn't done that first, biotech startup, I don't know actually know where I'd be. In the 90s, doing startups were, that was very uncommon, relative to the dot-com explosion. So it's much more common and accepted now. I like a lot of things, I think I fell into it. I just got lucky and then discovered I loved it.
That's amazing. So looking back, it's your 10th business startup now, Ron. What do you think is most important thing or biggest lesson you want to always make sure to remind yourself of as you are building even more success going forward?
That is a very good question. I would say that even now, when we go to start up a company, we know that it's unlikely to succeed. The odds are just stacked against you, right? You're trying to, almost by definition, do something that's never been done before. Earlier when I said that I've never had a business fail because of technology, that's a really important tell, because it goes to show you that just building something that works and checks all the boxes from a functional perspective is not remotely enough for what's needed to succeed.
And so what's needing to succeed then?
Honestly, it's a bunch of things, but not the least of which is luck. I mean, you have to work really, really hard. You have to be thoughtful. You have to be willing to pivot and admit when you're wrong and that you went down dead ends. But you also just have to be really lucky, because you can be too early to a market, too late. I could go on and on. And it's the reason that I think that most first-time startup founders are, if you ask them about a year in, they will say, yeah, that was a lot harder than I expected. And a lot of them, at least initially, don't realize that, because you're constantly trying to raise money or constantly trying to find new customers. People don't know what it's like to have a company with a name nobody knows. I mean, it's hard to get people to even return a call or reply to an email. But that you have to have this relentless sense of optimism, even though you may be going through cycles of really, really low points where, you're struggling with cash flow or market fit or whatever it may be, and continually having to put on a brave face and make sure that you're able to get through this. That's hard for a lot of people in the beginning.
Yeah.
At this point, I feel like I've been doing this so long, it's almost like second nature. I can almost sense viscerally when we're going the wrong direction, or when things are turning in the right direction. And so it's a lot easier. The amount of cognitive burden is much lower now.
And that's a great note. And I'm curious because you speak about the relentless optimism to the solution to the vision. But in the meanwhile, thinking back, right, XYZ decades ago, when you first closed your first startup, how do you see the balance between when to keep going versus when to say, this is probably not going to be a goal? It's time to move, or it's time to explore different possibility.
That is such a difficult question. In fact, I should have mentioned that earlier because I think that's one of the most difficult parts. Because the likelihood of succeeding are so low, you don't know. You know, when you're at these different low points, whether you should just call it quits. And sometimes you look back and you're like, oh, we should have recognized that the timing wasn't right, or maybe we had a product market fit issue much earlier. But, you know, people who throw in the towel too early then sometimes regret it. And you look back and you're like, oh, if we'd only persevered. I mean, think about my first startup, and we literally weren't making payroll.
Yeah.
And then within just a few years, we went public. So I don't think there is a right answer. I think you just have to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
If you feel like there are things you haven't tried, or that you know, then maybe the market's going to come your way and you're just a little bit early, or there are just a few things you need to do to get back on track, all of those can make a huge difference. And I would also just encourage people to remember that, you know, failure. You know, the failure of your first endeavor, or your second, your third, your fifth, that's okay, because those are really valuable learning experiences. And the
how
next
do you
time
pick
you
yourself
it,
back, like in this moment of failure or trying to feel me, oh my God, how do you pick yourself back?
I think, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but just for me personally, I always knew I wanted to do startups. So anytime I've been involved in a venture and it was less successful than we hoped, you just have to walk away from that and know that you did the best you could do, and you learned a bunch, and you won't make the same mistakes again. You'll go make a whole bunch of new mistakes, right? And you always will. We'll always be making mistakes. And so you just move on.
What a great attitude. Speaking about failure, we have talked about success too. Ron, I'm curious, what is your definition for success? And to that, are you successful today?
That is a great question again. And I've thought about this a lot, because I think I'm at the point in my career now where it's really important that I utilize my time more wisely. And so I have just this most simple criteria for success, and it's something one of my mentors taught me. It's that if you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you feel like you are going to spend that day doing things that are interesting and valuable, and you are, you know, learning and growing, and you're happy, that's what matters. That's all that matters, because you don't control most of the things in your life, but you can control where you spend and focus your time. And so for me, you know, using the, right now I'm involved with, you know, Imbue and Kung Fu AI. And I know, for example, if either of those companies were unsuccessful, I would go do something very similar 2 days after it. So I know I'm doing exactly what I want to do, because I would be doing it almost immediately again if it failed.
Wow. So are you a success in that?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, for me, success is, so I don't think there's fundamentally, you know, anything that is, that anybody should be doing necessarily, right? Like, you, part of life, I think, is figuring out what's meaningful and valuable to you as an individual. And
what's meaningful for you?
Well, that's a great question. The things I find most impactful are family and friendship. I mean, you know, above everything else. And so, you know, you work to live, you don't live to work. And so, as much as I love my job and I love what I do, you got to make time for family and friends. And so the fact that I'm able to spend that time with the people I love, to me, that's the most important part about success, that, you know, that my work would enable that.
So what do you think is your superpower, looking back to all the decision choices you make, and there's a tense business and more to come in the future, right? What do you think is your superpower, Ron?
Oh, you know, I truly don't know if I have any superpowers. I think I've been incredibly lucky.
What would be the possibility?
I think I've had incredible luck to be born, you know, in the time and the place where I was, and to be given the opportunities I was given. And if there's any superpower I have, it's that I was able to, you know, take advantage of these opportunities that were given me. Honestly, that's it. I don't think there's anything special about that.
You know, remind me of the art of war. There's a saying in any battles, and the Sun Tzu said there are three elements to any success, and the Chinese call 天时地利人和. The three words literally means, 天 means the sky, 地利 means the ground, and the third part means people. So imagine any war, any combat you're going after. You need to know, if I'm going to combat this field, what is the weather like tomorrow? Would it be raining or snowing? And my team train in that micro environment, that bigger environment we're all part of. Then 地利 means on the ground, right? Am I going to a forest? Am I going to a bushes or going to a flat area? My local area, the opportunity I am born with or I'm entering with. And the last piece is always people. And I think you said it just so perfectly, is, you know, kind of the moment you were born, the big environment, the trends, also your personal interest, and also everything all aligned in that one moment.
Yeah, very, very true. And I'm really lucky on all those accounts.
Well, I also think that people who are, you know, most accomplished or talented, the more they are, the more they think they are just being lucky, which I actually little bit disagree, but I can see the alignments for yourself as well.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Ron, you know, one day we're all going to be long gone, say 100 years later or 200 years later. What do you want a piece, a statement, a word describing your experience, your impact on this planet, if they are? I'll tell you mine while you're thinking.
Yes.
I want my... Is it called capstone or gravestone? Mm-hmm. I want that to say, she lived. I want to live to see it all. I mentioned earlier before we started that, you know, I grew up from a small little village where, I mean, no one ever expect to leave the town. And not to mention there's expectation for being a girl back then, a woman. There's career, there's family expectation that just doesn't align with who I am. And I just always felt I have this vision. I want to see the world, even though I did not know what that even meant. I don't even have a globe or a map. I don't know the country, America or England or Australia. I don't know any of those, because in my village, the village is the world. That's what everybody lived for.
Right.
And I just always just want to see it. And today, I finally felt like, for me, I just want to live to see all part of the world, whether it's traveling, different countries, different cuisines, or whether it's a startup world, a corporate world, a fancy or not so fancy world, all the amazing success, but also everything in the middle. And I think that is what made life so exciting for me. So I want the capstone or graveyard to say, she lived. So that'll be my piece.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. I don't think I have anything nearly as inspirational to share. You know, mine probably should just say, he was really fortunate or he was really lucky, because I think that's true.
Mm. What do you want, say, maybe your children or your grandchildren remember you by? Not just Ron is lucky, but something else.
You know, hopefully, I have three children. Hopefully, if there's anything that my wife and I have done, aside from, you know, raising them in a, you know, just a wonderful, loving environment, is equip them and empower them to understand that they can control their destiny, and they, you know,
they can or cannot.
They can. They. You can't control everything about your destiny, but if you work hard and you are dedicated, and nothing worthwhile is easy. It takes repetition and it takes effort that, you know, that they can have a really, you know, meaningful life in whatever way that they want to choose to express that meaning. And so to me, I think that's probably, you know, I'm more proud of my children and more, you know, proud of the job that we did raising them than I am about any startup stuff. So that's more important to me.
Oh my goodness, of course. I mean, they are the future leader. They are shifting the world a complete, a magical way that we can never imagine when is their time.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
I love that. So now let's shift the gear a little bit more back to startup. Because I know today, Ron, you not only have your own business for last, you know, like 10 plus startups, but you also actively mentor so many incredible, you know, men and women in this path to, you know, growing, raising, selling, all in above. I'm curious, what might be maybe one biggest mistake you see early stage founder oftentimes step into?
Yeah, there are some very common mistakes that I see quite a bit. They're probably just a handful that I'd focus on. One is a lot of people think that having a good idea is really the lion's share of the difficulty. And I like to tell people all the time that ideas are barely worth the paper they're written on. I mean, I can't exaggerate. Ideas are a dime a dozen. Execution is everything. So, now, that doesn't mean that you can succeed with bad ideas, right? I mean, you know, you do want to have good plans and good ideas and think things through. But just because you've come up with a good idea, it's just about worthless. And so I talked to a lot of people that mistakenely think, maybe they're not technical, so they don't, you know, have the ability to build prototypes on their own or something. And they'll think that, hey, I've got this great idea. All I need to do is go hire some people to go build this thing, and then I'll be successful. Well, the challenge with that, and this is the second mistake, is that putting money into building prototypes or minimum viable products is almost always a waste of time, because it is relatively expensive to go and explore that. And then once you've built some type of prototype, it's really expensive to maintain or modify. So if you are working with some outside consultancy to take your great idea and make it real, very frequently, the startup founders I talk to say they've taken their life savings and it's gone within 6 months.
So what would you advise? Because now I'm thinking that so many incredible smart men and women, maybe not technical, not have a computer science degree, he actually had a vision, and they are thinking going all in like you were once did.
Right.
How are you advising them to manage that risk, but also having a plan forward?
No, it's a great question. And it's actually pretty straightforward. Just realize that great ideas are very common. Execution's everything, and that you need a partner. So if you have an idea and you're not technical and you're not able to execute the construction, the building of this, whether it's in hardware or software, find co-founders that you can collaborate with and that you can build the initial prototype together with. You will be much, much more likely to figure out your failure points quickly. You won't go through your life savings and wake up a year later and have nothing to show for it. And you will have the folks on board together on the team that you need to succeed long term, because, you know, the idea that you will go build a prototype and go get some type of funding and then hire a team to take it over it can happen, but it is rarely a recipe for success.
Mm-hmm. So basically you're saying that find someone, give an equity, start a business together,
that's right,
share the risk together.
Exactly.
talking about finding co-founders, and I know you have many, many, your own shared on meeting, have part of different teams. How do you see that success team dynamic? How did he or she go out there and find the right person for them?
Oh my gosh. That is, it's really difficult. And I would say that's one of the lessons that you pick up in early startup failures is understanding the right dynamic and the right set of capabilities that you need in a pair of co-founders. So for example, Kung Fu AI, there are four co-founders and we have just a wonderful mixture. You know, we're almost 6 years old and we have this wonderful mixture of skill sets across the four of us. You know, two of us are technical, two of us are not technical, but the non-technical skills are as important as the technical skills, even within, you know, product companies that are software or hardware based. And figuring out that dynamic is really, really difficult. I honestly don't have any surefire, guaranteed ways to figure out if you have the right co-founder makeup, but getting that right is just one of the most important parts of any successful startup.
Mm-hmm. Just like marriage, right?
It's just like marriage. It's exactly
finding
right.
one person will be a quite a challenge versus find the one.
Exactly.
Is there any piece of advice, Ron, that you wish you know in your early on when you start building businesses?
Probably the biggest piece of advice would be that it's harder than it looks like from the outside.
It's always
harder, right?
Always.
Everything's harder than it looks. And then conversely, and this is the part that's so unintuitive, is that I see people so frequently look at a domain and think, oh, I'm not smart enough, or I don't have experience, or I don't have a degree. I could never do that. I have been really, really lucky to work in, something like six different domains, including biotech, e-commerce, telecommunications, healthcare, social media, et cetera.
Crazy.
And every time I walked into one of those domains, I was worried that I didn't know anything about them and that I was probably going to fail because of that. And it turns out that it's really actually pretty straightforward to come up to speed on any new domain. And to a shocking extent, a lot of the knowledge from previous domains, for example, you might think biotech would have nothing to do with e-commerce. An enormous number of the problems are actually the same in them. And so I would encourage people to, A, don't underestimate the difficulty of startup success, but B, they are probably overestimating the difficulty of being involved in any space. And if you want to get, for example, if somebody wanted to get involved in AI, there's nothing stopping you. There's amazing materials online now. Mm-hmm. You can get a world-class education on YouTube right now. So if you're interested in it, just go for it and do it because you can probably figure it out.
That's such an important and beautiful advice you just give. And I think it's incredible that if you have that self-awareness, knowing that I don't have XYZ domain in this arena, but I'm still feeling interested in, you know, moving forward, that introspectiveness will actually allow you to get a speed faster.
Right.
I think the worst combination will be you think you know, but you actually don't.
Exactly. Yeah. Thinking it's going to be easy and that you would have all the answers on.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I really believe that is one of the ability that differentiate from truly, and when I say true success, I mean in a way that you meant it for yourself, that success, entrepreneur versus not, is having that growth mindset, having the ability feeling that, you know what,
right,
I don't have all the know-how about X, Y, and Z, but I know if I put my hat into it, I will catch speed like this. And that ability to know and to trust yourself that I don't need to be the smartest in the room. I can learn from X, Y, and Z and my stay true to the vision, the why. I think that really truly is one of your superpower.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say so.
Amazing. Well, Ron, before we part ways, any last piece of thought you want to share with our audiences?
I would probably encourage people to not underestimate the returns on working really hard over a long period of time, because I would say, I was actually just saying to my wife the other day that I think I was probably in my 40s before I realized that some of the harder things in life just take years. So for example, mastering the piano, it's going to take decades.
Piano?
Not very well, but I do.
That's so cool.
But it just takes decades to really, really get good. And I wish I'd have known that a little bit earlier.
There's 10,000 hours in everything, right?
Exactly right.
I actually have one last question. Mm-hmm. For founders who are maybe in early stages today and maybe thinking that, yes, I know it's a long time, I'm in it, Ron, I'm into it. But right now, they may be raising the first or second check. Maybe they are in this mix of fundraising. They just feel like so confusing. There's so many things to do. Like, how would you advise in that process, especially in this, you know, economics?
Like how would I advise them on the fundraising part of it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a really tough capital environment right now. I think it's going to change quite a bit in the next 12 months. So I would tell them to just keep moving forward. Even if you just have one or two commitments, those will build. And if you can connect with the right investors, it makes all the difference. And what I mean by that is, if you're building a solution in a domain and you're talking to investors who don't have experience there, you're gonna have a translation problem. If you are building a tool, let's say in the architecture or space, if you talk to people who know that space and invest in that space, they will immediately understand the rationale, and you will be much, much more likely to close. And so,
smart money.
Exactly. Just focus on finding investors that know the domain you're building in, and you are much more likely to get investment. And if not, you'll get great feedback on why they're not investing, and you can course correct.
I love that. Ron, I think everything you do, we always do it with such intentionality. Have you always been thoughtful about your course of action and your why? I think that's really incredible. So with that, Ron, I want to thank you truly, sincerely for being here today, for sharing you such an incredible journey with each and every one of us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And thank you for everybody for tuning in today. We hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. And I cannot wait to see you all next week. Bye, guys.